seems a pity to miss such a good pudding.
Welcome to Euro Pudding. Euro Pudding is the European Screenwriters podcast about writing and producing better TV in Europe with weird accents.
Yes, very weird accents.
My name is Pierre Puget. I'm a French writer based in Berlin.
And hi, I'm Philip Scherzer, German writer. I'm also based in Berlin, in a different place though today.
Yeah, yeah. We had to record online because I'm a contact case for COVID. I got a warning from the app. I'm not too worried because I saw absolutely no one. So I guess it's just someone I crossed in the street. But still, you know, just better safe than sorry. So we are
definitely
not face to face today. Also, it's been like months we haven't done an episode because I guess we were all too busy. It's easy to get overwhelmed these days by work and stuff and the news. But we are back and we have already like the few next guests already lined up for our podcast for the end of this year and beginning of next year. So it should all work out okay for now.
Yeah, and just to let you know, this podcast is made by Sean, the Serialized Alumni Network. We represent screenwriters and producers from all over Europe who all went through the Serialized writing program in Berlin. And to know more about our writers and producers and members, Sean, Serialized, just check our website, www.seantv.net.
Yes, seantv.net. This is also where you can send us comments and emails, but also don't forget if you have the time now. I mean, you know, you're listening to this, so what else are you doing? Please open your podcast app, put some likes, some hearts, some stars, even a comment in iTunes apparently is very good for to help people find us. So, you know, thank you if you do this, and also of course thank you if you don't do it because you're already there listening.
Yeah.
Thank
you if you do it.
All right. I guess, you know, let's stop with this. You know, all the podcasts do this kind of opening chat, and I know it's boring. I skip it, so I don't blame you if you skip it. So let's move on already to our main guest for today. And the topic of this episode is TV festivals. We used to go to many TV festivals. Sometimes it's because it's great and useful. Also, it's a great procrastination to not be at home and write. But this year, we could not do that. But the festivals came to our rooms. So to talk about this festivals and the change of this year, let's welcome in the pudding, Gerard Meyer. Hello, Gerard.
Hello, Pierre. Hi, Philip.
Well, thanks a lot for being here. You're just probably still recovering of the ending of Seriencamp that was online this year.
I am trying to recover, but it's strange because there seems no end this year. Normally, you have this spike of adrenaline rush for 3 or 4 days, and then you fall into that post festival depression, but this year it just keeps on piling on. But maybe that's positive.
But isn't it usually like that? Usually, when one festival ends, you already start planning the next one.
Yeah, but normally we have like 2 or 3 weeks where we really decompress, and then normally I'm always on the road for then 5 to 6 weeks to completely get my head free. But this year it's completely different. Everything is different in 2020.
All right, we'll come to that, but first let's go back in the you know, past where we could travel and relax and meet people. So you started as a writer for movie reviews, video games, and like working a lot like copywriters in publishing for all this like cinephile nerdy stuff, right?
Less nerdy, more. Yeah, more commercial. What we did is we visited a lot of markets, film markets. There we scouted or watched a lot of stuff that was not sold to German territories yet. And starting from there, we were part of the process from buying the movie sometimes until doing the stuff for the DVD covers, doing the short synopsis, doing press kits, writing reviews for different point of sale magazines. So it was a lot of watching a lot of TV and movies and writing about a lot of TV and movies.
And then you co-founded Serien Camp. That was 5 years ago?
6 years ago.
And so we will talk a lot about Serien Camp, of course, in this episode, but it's Germany's first festival dedicated exclusively to serial storytelling. And so basically, it's a festival for the general audience, so the people in Munich who want to come and watch some exclusive TV series. But also in parallel of that, there is a few days for professionals of the industry to gather, meet, see conferences, and so on. And so we will talk about all the things you do to create and organize a festival like that every year and how you dealt with this special COVID year. And mostly, of course, our focus is how this festival impacts writers. And so to talk about this, well, we have a writer in with you in your office at Serien Camp. Hello, Melina, Natalie.
Hello.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm very fine. How are you?
I'm good. Healthy.
Healthy, yeah. I hope everybody is healthy.
I thought we stopped, we agreed as a society to stop asking how do you do in 2020. So you are a writer from Munich. I mean, you are all the three of you are from Munich, so from Bavaria at least. So that's a special episode also for that. You hold the Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Tübingen in Rhetoric and Media Science. That sounds very serious.
Right. It is very serious. It's a serious topic. And I take it very seriously, obviously.
And then you completed the summer program of the School of Cinematic Arts at USC in LA in 2016. You worked for the broadcaster ProSiebenSat as a development person. What was your...
I started there actually as an intern. Then I did the whole like internship career path, pretty classic, I think. And first, I actually worked most in online and social media. So I was an editor for the online department. But I was already working with loads of series. Like my topics were always the US dramas and shows we had on the channel. So I was pretty close to American productions pretty early in my career. Right. And then I, at the end of it, last 2 years, I was actually in the department that was basically not buying, but screening loads of US dramas and US shows and, you know, like choosing them. I was also responsible for the dubbing of the shows in German. So I worked with loads of American TV.
It's good. I do this, you know, not being paid. So being paid for it.
Yeah, I got money for watching loads of TV. That is true.
And then also in parallel, and for now 6 years, you're also and mostly a freelance screenwriter. You wrote a show this year that people can watch on Join called Das Internet.
Yeah, right. I was part of that. That is a cute little web series where the whole cast mainly is... they're all influencers, like mainly Instagram influencers, teenagers, all really cute, lovely people. And right, I wrote all of this.
Excellent. So Join is a new, for those who don't know, is a new online platform for TV series and movies in Germany. And you also joined the team writing the German series Sankt Mike. I pronounce that right?
Yeah, you pronounce it perfectly right. It's Sankt Mike. That was actually before... That was last year, mainly. I was in the writer's room for the show, which was an amazing experience, to be perfectly honest, because it was one of the first real writer's rooms I experienced in Germany. And I feel like as fellow writers, you know what I mean by real ones. Like, I feel there's a tendency in Germany to call a lot of things a writer's room. But usually it's just one writer in a room, which is not how it's supposed to be necessarily. And with Sankt Mike, that was a really amazing experience because it was an actual writer's room with more than one writer, actually. We had one head writer. She was really amazing. And a whole team of other really talented writers. And yeah, that was a great experience. And I got to write two episodes for them.
Excellent. Then let's talk, because like you said, like what is a real writer's room, and the landscape of TV series has been changing a lot. Even you know, even my mother knows that there is a peak TV somewhere in the world for a few years. I mean, my mother has, my parents have switched from watching, you know, whatever was on TV to have a Netflix and Amazon Prime subscription and binge watching like Mad Men and The OA. So, you know, like there's been definitely a shift in how we watch TV. And this year has been even more so a proof of that. And I guess what people not necessarily know is that there's also been a peak TV festival thing where a few years ago, no one had the idea of having TV festivals, and then you were one of the first, and clearly the first in Germany, but now all over Europe, you can, as a writer, spend basically your year going from one festival to other festival and not ever be at home and write, which, you know, is, as we know, is the goal.
This is where everybody wants to end up. This is, yeah.
So how did you started thinking that it would be a good idea to create a TV festival?
That's a good question, because long before we thought that it's a good idea, there was a time when we just thought that's an idea, and that was about 11 years ago. We Christopher Büchele, with whom he's one of the co-founders also, and Malko, we watched a lot of shows that didn't make it on German television, and for us, we wanted to have a platform on which to screen those kind of TV shows that we thought that deserved a bigger audience. And we wanted to take those shows that had a great visual feeling or that had great images and put them up on a large screen. And 10, 11 years ago, this was, I think it would have never worked, because back then TV series, it was very niche. And a lot of the people that we talked to, a lot of the stuff that we did, was for a very small audience. And then we developed for a big publishing house in Berlin, we developed ideas. And one of the ideas was to create a magazine for them, and for that magazine also its own festival. And this festival, is, we thought there are so many different festivals out there, let's do the series festival we always wanted to do. We pitched it to them. And they didn't like it. But we put so much work in it. And right there, we had a little bit money left from another project. And so we put all that money into Seriencamp. And this was like hitting the wave when you're a surfer, hitting the wave right at the right time. Because I think we were really lucky that how it turned out, or how serious become the equivalent to bands. Like now when you talk to people, it's not so much about what kind of bands do you listen to, because there are too many out there and nobody can keep track of any of them, but it's more like about series. What kind of series do you watch? Tell me three or four series that you liked in the last year, and I know what kind of person you are. This is a little bit the thing that I get from it.
This is interesting, because it means it's more connected to also the a mainstream vision of culture and pop culture compared to film festival, because there have been film festival for since basically cinema exists, but it's always something for professional to maybe give some prizes for buyers and all that. So how did you approach a TV festival? Like, did you, you know, because there's also the professional aspect, you know, and why did it become to be needed? But did you have a different approach in mind for that?
To be honest, in the beginning, we just wanted to do a festival for the public audience. The idea was to have something where we can take four or five of the shows that we saw, and it's just a nerd thing. It's like this, hey, look what I found. I want everybody to see what cool thing I found. Let's put it up on the big screen. That was a little bit the starting point. And then this was like 7 years ago. I was traveling around Europe to three festivals and had a look at them, and tried to piece together from those different elements how a festival could look like, because we didn't have no experience whatsoever. So we really started from zero, apart from loving series. And rather early on, what we saw was that it was a festival in Malaga in the south of Spain, and they had really amazing TV shows there. But I went into all the screenings, and there were around 10 or 20 people in those screenings. Only the Game of Thrones screening, this was like completely packed. And then 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, I was at a great festival, Totally Serialized in London, from Lorraine Sullivan, one of the founders there. And there I saw that all the screens were packed, but it was more more catering to the industry. And the talks were much more interesting than you had at the classical public festival. And this is where I put those two things together and said, when we do this festival, we need to have an industry days or industry program, so that you can have that kind of discussions that we always wanted to have. One of the ideas was also always to create something where people not only watch the series alone at home, but afterwards have the room and the space to exchange themselves or to talk about what they just saw. And those three elements put together was like the first incarnation of Zehrencamp now 6 years ago. Yeah.
You usually show what, the pilot, the first two episodes of a show? How do you choose which episode to screen and how much, and what kind of frustration or actually desire it can create?
Wow, that's a big problem. It was a big problem before. It's an even bigger problem now, that people sometimes are very frustrated when they can watch only two or three episodes and they are really hooked on something and they might not know if they can ever watch it in full. I think it changed a little bit, but 5 or 6 years ago, it was much more difficult, because about half of the shows that we screen in the classical physical festival are shows from our content partners. That's like Sky, Stars Play, Magenta TV, Join, you name it, they're most likely part of our program. The other half comes from series that we think that deserve a bigger audience, because they show the whole spectrum of what's out there in terms of serialized storytelling. And we found out especially this year, when we had about 80 shows online, about two-thirds of them were premieres, German premieres, Europe premieres. We even had some world premieres. And there we had a lot of feedback. We had about 30,000 visitors online, which is for us enormous. But a lot of feedback was that people got really hooked on some of the shows. And we always had to say to them, yeah, sorry, but now you have to wait maybe half a year, maybe a year. Maybe it will never turn up. But right now, I think in the situation the market is in right now, you will see all the shows that we picked sooner or later here in Germany. But people need to learn patience. But I think it's easier than ever before, because when we started this 6 years ago, you didn't have this selection to choose from. And now you don't even know where to start. And people need more curated content. They need someone who tells them, watch this, watch this, watch this, because it's good, or because I know you like it. And so I think it's okay. People can wait maybe a little bit to watch all episodes of Moa, one of my favorites this year, for example.
Like, how many series do you actually watch usually? I mean, you must watch a total lot, because I mean, to pick those that number for the festival, like, can you put a number to that at all?
I kept track. I think in the first year it was around 150 series that we watched, or that we kept track of. And back then we had it felt like we have a good overview what's happening series-wise in the US, in Europe, in the UK, and for the whole year. It felt like now we have here a list with everything that's interesting. Let's see what we can actually get. This year we watched around 350 series, and it's just the tip of the iceberg, because obviously we started to look much more what's happening in China, what's happening in Korea, what's happening in India, try to pick one or two or three series there. And if you dive down those rabbit holes, you see what's actually out there, and that you can you can never dig your way through all that stuff. That's really enormous, and I think it gets more crazy each year. Last year, I think it were even more serious, but this year we concentrated on certain stuff. We said, okay, we don't take anything from the big US ABC and Fox and all that if it's not coming through sales, because you invest a lot of time in something and then it might never happen because it's much harder to get. And we invested more time in series that we thought that did something very unique and interesting in terms of storytelling, in terms of visuals, and try to get those for the festival this year.
Let's focus more on the professional, the forum aspect of the festival, to try to basically describe our listeners like what it is to participate in a festival like Zerienkamp. There's also others, you know, for example, Cerimania in France, which does the same thing, having also a big part for the mainstream general audience and a few days for the professionals. Melina, what is the experience of a writer arriving in a day of a forum like that? So we have an idea.
You mean when it's not 2020?
Exactly, in the real life of before.
It's a lot of chatting. It's just so much talking, which can be fun. I know that loads of my fellow writers get a kick out of it sometimes. And it is fun. It's exciting because you have so many interesting people and, you know, people that you rarely see maybe at Berlinale or something. But that's so huge, you know, for a film festival, Berlinale is and just a city. Berlin is massive. So for Zerienkamp, it's kind of special for a TV writer because you get all those interesting people, your fellow writers on the spot, and you can exchange stories, experiences. You can chat about your recent projects or what you're coming up with. It's just a lot of talking. It's the best way though. Like, it's so much fun because obviously you go out, you have a drink. I mean, you guys, we know each other, I think, even from a festival. Pierre, I met you on a festival, on the same camp, actually, right? Like, 3 years ago. So
yep.
We met. So you met amazing people. And that is, I think, is the biggest part for me, at least as a writer, is the connection you made there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these festivals really helped to create this new dimension where I feel TV writers are now, which did not happen exist like a few years ago, which we feel connected, we feel we have colleagues, we have partners, we have people who go through the same things, and we have new friends and people we can rely on for advice or just chat about what we do. And I think this is a huge part of these festivals for us writers. And I really recommend, you know, younger writers who just graduate from different schools to do this, because that's what I did after graduating Therialize a few years ago. Is I spent 2 years basically trying to go to all of these festivals all over Europe. And not only it's fun, you learn stuff, you can be very inspired by some talk or by some conferences, but mostly the networking, and not in a cynical way, in a very human, exciting way, works almost naturally. And actually some of the jobs, some of the series I'm working on now, being paid to write some fun stuff, actually it's because I met some people at different festivals, and the connection and the, because it's natural, because like you say, you have a drink, you discuss. So I think that's a huge part of our career now, but it's crazy to imagine that just a few years ago it did not exist. So thank you.
The socializing part is what I missed most this year. Like, not seeing you guys, not seeing... That's why it's so lovely. It's international, and even people, you know, from the UK, from the US, from all over the world come to Munich, and we meet here and hang out and talk. And that's something really special that happens once a year. And not having that I really missed it this year.
Yeah, same here. I mean, what I kind of, last year when I attended Zerienkamp, for example, what I especially loved about this festival and about the conference in general is that it's all kind of organized in a, you feel like in this enclosed space at the HFF in Munich. So it's very easy to meet and to just like go to a bar that's right next to there. Whereas when you compare it like to Berlin, you feel like all the time you have to travel from east to west, from north to south. And most of the time you're basically traveling to venues and stuff. But it's at Seriencamp, that's what I like very much there, is that it's very much in this one space, and people feel like I think it's maybe a reason that people feel a bit more relaxed there. That was my experience last year.
Yeah, that might be true. That because it's also, I mean, I don't want to make it sound too romantic, but it is a bit like coming home. Because again, most of those people you don't see on the regular, even if you work together, because it's so international. And you know, especially serious writers are a special breed, I'd say. So it's fun to have this special place where we can interact and chat and drink and yeah, just socialize.
Yeah, and it's my usually my one time in the year when I spend a week in Munich and I can try all the new cool places to have breakfast and
which is also very important, of course. So yeah, I got a little bit off your question. So it's a lot of talking, but also it's not just socializing and not just chitty chat. It's also lots of business talk, which I'd say, like you said, Pierre, is a really important experience and part of the job. And I'd say that it doesn't matter if you just started writing, if you're just starting out as a writer, or you've been in the business for a couple of years, or you're already like, you know, getting paid every day from your writing job and you're famous, whatever, and go to those festivals because it is part of the routine and you should be used and you should get used to talking to people about your projects. It's a big important part. Even if you're not pitching all the time, it's not about doing one elevator pitch after the other. It's more about just chatting what you're up to, what styles you wanna, you know, what you like also. Just be in touch with the people and be able and learn how to easily chat about your projects and the stuff that is close to your heart. I think that's really important. So in whatever position you are as a writer, you should go to those festivals, make the best out of it.
At the end of the day, I think it's a bit like dating as well. Like you have to get a feel for each other, meet producers and to get to know them so you know how to be able to work with them and stuff. So I mean, you can write emails all the time, but then at the end of the day, you have to, I don't know, understand each other, like each other, and then maybe get together.
Yes, it's really like Tinder, kind of. Like, I mean, we're going to get to that later for sure, but in those Zoom calls I had with the producers, I really felt like a blind Tinder date, kind of, all the time, because you're trying to match your project with the perfect producer, and it's very much like Tinder and dating.
Except it's only for a long time, and that's the thing. Like a TV series, just you know, the most optimistic number of you know amount of time it takes from like you know the idea to making it is minimum 3 years. It could be 7 years, it could be ages, and so that's why I completely agree with you, Melina. You have to keep meeting these people. You have to be yourself. You have to be a nice person to talk to, because you know, first and foremost, people are looking for good partners, people who, you know, it's nice to work with, because you're stuck with someone on the project, a producer, a partner, a co-writer for years and years. So you need to make sure that it's going to happen, you know, hopefully the best way possible.
That is so true. It is a massive commitment, in the best case, right? And also, I think what I also learned is that you're not just selling your idea. You're not just selling your project. You're selling yourself. I know that sounds very markety, but I think there's something to it. Like I say about myself that I specialize in comedy, and I feel like nobody would believe me is if, you know, like I'd sit in the corner and just like had a look like a piece of toast or something. So I have to go out there, I have to chat, and I have to be a little bit fun, otherwise people wouldn't believe me. I myself wouldn't believe me that I'm a comedy writer. Like, where are my jokes coming from when I'm not able to, you know, joke around with my fellow writers or colleagues? So you're always selling a bit of yourself too.
Yeah, and I think that has changed, at least in my experience, in my point of view, very strongly in the last few years. That one of the parts that we have at Seriencamp, the story exchange, the idea behind it was to obviously create a platform for which writers and creatives can pitch their projects. But for us, it's much more important there that writers, creatives have the opportunity to meet producers and people from broadcasters and commissioning editors and present themselves, and not in the high pressure situation of a pitch where you're up on stage and 150 people are looking up on you, because that we got from feedback from a lot of writers that they said, I'm not my best there. I'm going to do it if I have to, but I rather present my project in a intimate 15-minute, 30-minute slot. And in this situation, and this is what we always get as feedback, it's much more about getting to know the person. It's maybe you're writing a 30 million per season science fiction epic that will never get made, but the way you present it, the way you present yourself, shows also a lot to the to the persons you might create a relationship with. And I think this is getting more and more important as we see that the big streamers, for example, Netflix, they are looking for that kind of connection to talent. A lot of big production companies here in Germany look for that kind of connection to talent, because talent is rare and you need to foster it and you need to build a personal relationship with it. So for all the writers out there, I think that's, I always get it as feedback that sometimes they're not happy in those social situations, and I'm there for the first time and I don't know who to speak to and I don't know anyone there. But that's what I tell some of the students that that I give talks to. I say, yeah, but this is the same situation for everybody who's there for the first time. That's for me the first three times when I were at serious festivals, I wasn't even part of the industry. It was worse. You, at least you're part of the industry. So jump over your shadow, do this, and go there and sell yourself.
And it's really just routine too. I think the more you do it, the more you get used to it, and then you might even enjoy it. It's actually, like I said, for me, it's quite thrilling, and I enjoy those days, but at the end of it, I'm wiped. Like, I always go to my hotel rooms at Berlinale or here, my own home, and I'm just like, I don't want to talk to anybody for the next 12 hours or so. It's great fun, but it's also very energy draining. So you should see it as a professional thing. Even though it makes loads of fun, it is professional. It's a lot of work.
Even for myself, who are, you know, I studied as a director and I'm more extrovert. And so I need this moment, this festival, in a way to recharge my enthusiasm for projects and for this world and all that. But definitely there was one or two years where I pushed too far. I went to too many places in, like, you know, in 2 months I could go to 5 places in Europe to do these things, and that was a bit too much. So it's also a balance. But so all this is when it's a normal year. This year, it's not a normal year. So a lot of festivals either got pushed or cancelled, but also when it became obvious that this pandemic was not going to be short. Some festivals also moved online. How did you address this corona thing? And how early did you know
that it's gonna be we talked about it in the team. This is Marco and Simone, like in the core team. We talked about it for the first time beginning of April. It's like, because then Filmfest Munich got canceled, for which we also curate some of the series that they show. And for us, we have a very small team and very limited resources. So it was, there comes a point where we have to decide what we do. And we thought that, yeah, maybe we can do this in June. And in June, we can decide what to do. But then I argued that no matter what happens, it changes so quickly. And that is what we saw already in May, that 2 or 3 weeks can either, in other countries, can either go for a very dire situation or it can be very relaxed. And for something like a physical event, you cannot plan that. So it was rather early. I think it was mid-April, end April, that we said we're not going to do a physical no matter what happens, because we cannot plan it properly and we cannot plan both. So we have to decide for one of them. And by then, I already was at a lot of events that had to move to the virtual space. And What we saw there is that a lot of stuff that works perfectly fine on a classical stage, when people are forced to physically be there and they have to listen for 45 minutes, and then maybe you have an aha effect of something, epiphany that comes from that 45 minutes talk, that all that stuff doesn't work virtually or online. And this is what we saw very early, that even though you sometimes have the most interesting discussion partners, that I found myself, don't know, opening a tab and looking on IGN game reviews or whatever. And so the first thing is that we wanted to go away from that Zoom aesthetic, and did Serenkamp TV in a proper TV studio, which was a crazy experience because we had no experience whatsoever, and it was a good learning experience, yeah, an expensive learning experience. This was one of the things how we tried to mitigate that. The other thing is we knew that we couldn't replicate the networking part, this part of meeting people, this chance encounters of standing in a group, then someone comes to it and introduces it. And all the stuff that we looked at was very forced. It always felt like, and then you have to speed date, and now you have like 3 minutes in like chat roulette-y feeling. And there we also had the experience that it wasn't what we were aiming for. So we tried to kick the networking a little bit to another part of the festival, to the pitch pool, and from the beginning, I think it was from May on, we tried to always find the big positive effect that this move to the virtual space could have. And this were mostly two things for me as someone who does most of the programming. It was, I didn't have to choose. Normally we have about 34 to 40 series, and now it maybe I've gone overboard with 80 series, but it was a little bit too much. But this was like one of the extremes, to not have to choose. If there's someone who says, I have this great series and this great series, which one of them do you want to show? And I said, I take both. And this was very nice. And for that, we built this VOD platform. And there, from the beginning on, we looked at what a lot of different festivals did. It was always, the most important thing is that the stream looks good and that it doesn't, that it always works. So there was a lot of research going into that, what kind of streaming services are out there. We learned a lot, not only about TV shows, but about how to make a live TV show, but also about streaming services. How do you implement it? Who are the best providers for that? And the third thing is where we saw that the moving to the online had actually a big positive effect was with pitching. Normally, if we're with pitching, we have about 150 submissions from which we choose 8 to 10 who can pitch up on stage. And this year, we thought, why not open it up? We don't have a limitation in terms of what we who we can put up on stage. Let's just make a call to projects and look how many of those we actually can present in a digital space. And this is, I think, we had 300 submissions this year, and 75 of them we chose for Pitch Pool, which was like an online mixture of a VOD platform and matchmaking, where creatives and producers could produce 3-minute elevator pitches. And those 3-minute elevator pitches were like a calling card, and then could the commissioning editors, the people from the broadcasters, the producers, they picked their favorites, and we arranged meetings between writers and producers. And there, this was a big experiment, but it looks like a successful one. I think we are 170 meetings, something like that. So it looks like people liked it, even though there we learned a lot what we would change next year. And yeah, it's always a learning experience.
Definitely, yeah. But and Melina, you were actually part of the pitch pool, right?
Yeah, all those 170 meetings, they were all mine.
Okay, yeah. Could you walk us through your experience as a writer? How was that for you?
It was a game changer, I gotta say, in a way. I honestly, to be frank, I'm still a little bit overwhelmed by it right now because it just today I got another another production just called my agent right away and wanted to talk about my series that I had in the pitch pool. So I'm still like, you know, cashing in from the trailer I put on there. So yeah, it was overwhelming, or is still, and it was definitely a new experience, but very interesting. Because for a writer, and I feel like you guys totally get it, it was like the tables turned. Because it's not like usually when you go to those events and you want to talk to producers, even if it's the speed dating situation, usually as a writer, you are in the position where, you know, you bring your piggies to the market and you want to sell your stuff. So you talk to everybody and like, okay, do you maybe like this project of mine, or here I got this idea, or what you're looking for, or you're looking for comedy, you know, I have this and this. So you're always like in the selling position, you're always in the active position. And with Pitch Pool, since I handed in my project and then I had to produce this trailer, it was more like I had this work up front, and then I put it in, or they put it online on the pitch pool, and then I had this like waiting period, of course, but then the people came to me, and that was something I haven't experienced in that way before, and was really interesting and really pleasant, I gotta say, as a writer, because when someone comes to you because they're already a little bit interested in what you have put out there, you have a common base, like common ground, you can start a discussion on, you know? It's not like, oh yeah, I don't even know what you want, I'm just gonna try and sell you something. But you've seen my stuff, so you must be a little bit interested, I can assume. So it's a different way of starting a conversation that I hadn't had like that before. That was really amazing, gotta say.
That sounds good. Can you describe more concretely what you had to do? What could these producers could see of your project on the Pitchpool platform? Like, were there like a Bible, a concept, like some reading, or just a video?
I feel like I can even explain that better. So there was two stages. The first one, I had to apply with a kind of like a project Bible, but you had like three different stages of projects, right? Like mine was in the early stage. I didn't hand in that much. But there were two other stages.
I think it's early stage, intermediate stage, and late stage, depending on how much work you already put in. And for us there, at that point, it's important that we see from the submissions that someone has actually thought about the project. Because that's in all the different kind of selection committees that I sit, you always get those things where someone says, there's a call to a project, I have this idea lying around, let's put this on paper. And then you have like this 1.5 pages where you see that no one ever really thought about the project. It's just, yeah, let's put something in. So there is a kind of hurdle that you have to take in terms of, I think it's a treatment, it's a short series Bible, and depending how advanced it is, the more you have to deliver. And I think in the last stage, it's in the best case a proof of concept, maybe a pilot you did, or at least several scripts that you can send in. And after that, it was create your trailer.
Exactly. I gotta say, I think I was a little bit freestyled a bit, I think you could call it. Because in the description, I think it only said it's supposed to be a pitch trailer. And I knew very early on that I don't want to do the floating head thingy. You know, like, I feel like that's what Gert just said, like the Zoom aesthetic that you see all the time right now, like on every table read, on every pitch meeting, whatever, which absolutely makes sense for sure. But I just assume that they're on the other side of the computer. There are so many producers and people that are so sick of watching a floating head in space, talking to them about something they're maybe not even or just remotely interested in, that I knew really early on that I don't want to do that. So I tried to come up with something original and something that would like show also my kind of humor, my kind of style as a writer.
Yeah, and that's what the idea from the beginning is, to have to open it up completely, that you don't have to do this 8 minute I stand in front of my wall of books and explain to you in detail what happens in the first season of my show, but to make it short, 3 minutes, so that people really have to think about what is the most important thing I want to talk about. But at the same time, open it up completely. And this is what we always told people. You can do whatever you want. If you want to reenact your favorite scene with Lego, do it. If you want to, you have a proof of concept and you want to show one scene that you already did, do it. And it's really interesting. Maybe it was a little bit hubris in there, because we wanted to force people to really get creative with the idea and really show that they burn for that kind of idea and what they would do for it. And it's interesting to see what kind of pitches came out there, what kind of pitching videos we had, and what kind of pitching videos then were very successful, which had a lot of meetings. And there was sometimes a very direct relationship. Maybe that's not fair to people who maybe have great ideas and don't have the time, the energy, the budget to do a great trailer. But at the same time, there were people who did just the thing, talking in front of my book wall, and just had a very precise pitch and on point. And this is what's about. This is how it's gone. That's how it's gonna. How long it's gonna run. This is the genre. And this really worked. And then we had under the video, there was a short, like a teaser, like 3 sentences, what's this show about? Nothing longer. And we just wanted to pique the interest. And then the deeper talks would happen in the Zoom meetings we arranged.
And at the end of the day, I think that is a really economic way to actually do it, because, I mean, people are first, they're getting their interest by the video and the log line. And if they're hooked by that, then they can ask for further stuff. So I think that's kind of
a good way to do it. I gotta say, honestly, for me, it made even more sense, because at the end of the day, even though we're called writers, but what we want to do is TV, right? We want to have an audiovisual product at the end of the day. So going the, like, taking the shortcut and making a trailer, even, for example, like me, I had no material whatsoever yet to put in a trailer, actually, like no film material, but it is already the right language, I think, to talk to, because you can use images, you can use colors, you can use music, and all of those pieces, bits and pieces that are supposed to come out in the end anyways. So using that shortcut and producing something, some movie in the first place, I think is might even hit the nail, you know, better.
That's very interesting. I think it goes to what we were saying earlier. Like first writers had to get used to get out and meet people and sell their project and themselves. And now this online thing pushed a new skill or a new revelation that I agree with you. We are writers of audiovisual, so we have to...
We're writers, but we're half filmmakers too. So we think, or we should at least, I think in pictures and think in aesthetics and think in colors and movements and whatnot. So why not use that right away, right?
Completely agree.
What we found out there is that you also had a lot of people who said that they would normally never ever go up on stage because they're not comfortable in that situation. And they were sometimes those that did the most amazing trailers, because they put all, they then had an actor reenact part of their pitch and combined it with a mood trailer and this in a 3 minute very concise thing. We see this person has sense of timing, sense of atmosphere, and so I think that's a really, it can be a better calling card, but for us the goal is next year to offer for everybody, for every kind of pitcher, for every kind of creator, the right way to find their outlet of presenting what they love to do.
I mean, the thing is, I gather you haven't probably, you're still so occupied with this year's festival, Gerhard, as you said. You probably haven't had time to think about next year yet, but that's what made me think right now. Do you think that this kind of becomes kind of that next year's? Because, I mean, we won't have like, most likely we won't have like a Syrian camp that's going to be like the one before COVID. So it's definitely going to influence future festivals. Definitely. So what is your opinion, or what do you think? Do you think this kind of like, you're going to have like a kind of a hybrid version that you kind of make a pitch pool next year, maybe, and also like pitching on stage, or what can you imagine?
We would love to do hybrid. The biggest challenge right now is, to be completely honest, is the budget, because we doing everything online, it sounds so much easier to do. It was a lot of time and a lot of money spent in places that you might not even see at the first place. But to do both, which I would love to do, we definitely need to look at our budget and see how we can combine those two. But for me, for the festival, the hybrid version is a must, because we had an impact that we never had before, growing from the festival was obviously regional mostly. The people from the industry people came from other cities, but when we had a guest who came from Freising, which is like 45 minutes from Munich, this was like, was great already. And I know we had someone from Salzburg once came from a series. But this year, with 30,000 people who from all over Germany, we obviously want to keep that momentum going, but at the same time, we still want to create the cinema as a place to experience something together, to experience a show together, to discover something together, because that's a feeling that you cannot reproduce. And for the conference, obviously, we want to, especially in terms of Story Exchange Pitch Pool, we want to do both, even because we had people who submitted pitches and ideas who would never be able to come here because it's too expensive to just come here, do a little bit of networking. Mm-hmm. It is still Munich, so it can be expensive. But long answer, short idea behind it. We really want to do both next year. And right now we're looking at how we can puzzle that together.
I feel like Pitch Pool was one important step in this development towards the position of writers, to push writers.
Well, that sounds like a great conclusion on what was this festival online, and I think it sounds like a very mostly positive, I would say overwhelmingly positive feedback.
If I had negative stuff, I wouldn't say it
sitting
next to Gerhard right now. I'll email you my negative feedback.
Hopefully us first. We want to improve. They don't need to improve.
I want to gossip though.
Thanks a lot for being with us in the pudding and to talk about what you did this year with Syrian Camp. And congrats, Milena, with your project. And I hope it Pitch Pool moved it forward.
Thanks so much for having
thanks
us.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much. It was really fun to talk to you and to see you a bit at least.
Yeah, so to the next festival.
Yeah, right.
We don't know when, we don't know where, but... And this is the part where we say thank you to our sponsors, because, you know, they help us with the show and the equipment. So thank you to C21, C21 in London, c21media.net. C21 Media is the home to the international entertainment community. They're an international publishing company and digital channel business, and organize many events like Content London, which is happening right now. Is it still happening? I mean,
yes,
it was happening. No, I think it will be finished by the time we publish this. But I mean, it was a big part of November, beginning of December. Content London online, of course. And so thank you, C21, and check them out. And you can also register for their newsletter, where you have news every day about the business in Europe and globally. And thank you, Paper to Film, .com. It's a French script platform, but it also exists in English. Basically, writers can put their scripts or ideas or logline in there, and they can meet with co-writers, with composer of music, and producers, agents can look for stories depending on genre and read what you choose to make public, and they can contact you. And basically, it's a great way to make contact and maybe sell your projects. It's free for the first few projects for every writers. It's also curated, so only good projects end up in there. It works really fine. So thank you, Pepa to Film, for helping us with this podcast. All right, that's it for this big talk about festival. Then what would I think? It just made me miss festivals a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I was so craving to go get back into movie theaters and watch TV series there. I mean, it's only that. I mean, not just TV series, but in getting together with professionals and all that in general. It's I really miss that as well.
Yeah. So hopefully, let's see what next year brings us. So let's recommend a few stuff. My first recommendation has, in a way, nothing to do with series, but actually is about screenwriting. And it's a book called The Big Goodbye by Sam Wesson. It's a big essay about the making of Chinatown. It's super interesting. It follows the four men behind the movie. The producers and Polanski and Jack Nicholson. And of course, at the center of the book is Robert Towne, the screenwriter, and how he wrote on that. And I don't know. I thought it was very, very interesting to be in the mind of the creator of a movie and the what it is to write something, what it is to be stuck, what it is to know the theme, to know to have a, you know, but not managing the end. It's a great tale of the old Hollywood and what it is to be a writer, or what it was to be a writer in Hollywood in the end of the 60s and beginning of the 70s. It's very well written. It really puts you in that world. I really enjoyed it a lot. And yeah, my other recommendation is the show The Good Fight, which is the spin-off of The Good Wife, created by the Kings, husband and wife team of writer, and I found it amazing. I'm still in it, but the fact how they managed to use the news, and there's like an anger, you know, towards Trump and what's happening in the world, and I feel this anger in the show, and the show never always like goes into, you know, Me Too and violence from police and Black Lives Matter, and you know, like the show really goes into big hot topics, but in such a always surprising and entertaining way. The show makes me laugh very often, like really laugh out loud, but at the same time it's engaging, it's crazy, it's super daring. They have little songs sometime in the middle of an episode to explain how the, you know, some politics stuff works. It's just, I don't know, I found it really like a amazing, you know, procedural TV at its best, like where the form is so free and so original, but also with so strong actors. I'm having a lot of fun watching that.
One can hear that you're really amazed by it.
Yeah, I can't wait to. I'm already a bit sad that when I finish season four, I have to wait.
Definitely. Yeah, that's how I felt with The Crown, actually, I have to say, because I mean, I think everybody's watching that right now. It got recommended to me, and I actually kind of feel a bit guilty that I haven't watched The Crown earlier. And now I'm actually through. I watched all the four seasons now, and yeah, I had the same feeling in a way.
Oh no, I really love The Crown too. Yeah. And do you have another recommendation?
Yeah, definitely. I talked about that once before. I think it was what was the screening? It was a live reading that they had online of Fast Times at Richmond High. Talked about it in another episode, and there was another one just last weekend. Last weekend on, it's Saturday the 5th, it was. It was The Goonies. They had a live reading of the script of The Goonies, and they literally had almost every actor in there who was in the movie, like, you know, Sean Astin. I forget all the names all the time. And they actually, and for the small parts, they also had like Zach Braff and Donald Faison from Scrubs read the small parts, and it was actually we're gonna put the link in the show notes that you can watch it as well. It's on YouTube right now, and it's so fun, it's so much fun to actually watch that, and how they actually produced that video with all being on Zoom, and how they intercut, and then they cut to scenes from the movie, and then they improvise sometimes, and then they actually, in their own homes, they reenact parts of the movie. It was so much fun to watch that. And So it Excellent. Was a Goonies live table read for a charity called No Kid Hungry.
Well, that sounds fun. I really like the Goonies, and I haven't watched that in a long time. So yeah, I will check the live reading for sure. And that's it for this episode of Europudding. Thank you for listening. We will be back very soon with more exciting guests. You will find the show notes and the links of everything we talked about on our website, europudding.com, and, right here in your favorite podcast app.
Yes, and please tell your friends about us, subscribe to us, like us wherever you can, give us 5 stars, find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You just have to type Europudding and leave us a comment. And
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!